Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Frank McGillin, CEO of The Clinic by Cleveland Clinic. Frank's leadership experience spans over 20 years of management, marketing, and innovation roles at Philips, Johnson & Johnson, and digital health startups with expertise in launching and scaling innovative global businesses at the intersection of healthcare and technology. Most recently, Frank was chief commercial officer at Neurometrics, where he led the startup of a new digital health business and established partnerships with leading companies in the space around the country and beyond. Welcome, Frank, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure. So, The Clinic by Cleveland Clinic, what is that? What does that mean, and what has brought you there?
The Clinic by Cleveland Clinic, it's a joint venture between Cleveland Clinic and Amwell. And the vision that established The Clinic, and it really started out a conversation between Dr. Tom Mihaljevic, the CEO of Cleveland Clinic, and Dr. Ido Schoenberg at Amwell, was saying, you know, Cleveland Clinic has, you know, 100 years of incredible expertise, specialists that are really best in the world. And, you know, how can we tap into that with digital technology to make that kind of expertise available to more people? And that was the genesis. And from there, you know, basically the decision was really the best way to make that happen was to set up a separate company. So we've been in business or operational since January of 2020. And our initial focus is in the expert second opinion space and providing access to Cleveland Clinic experts for people dealing with complex medical conditions, leveraging the Amwell technology.
And is that across the range of clinical specialties, or is it focused in any particular area?
If you look at our patient profile, and I think it's would be pretty consistent with what you'd see in any kind of second opinion, whether it's virtual or whether it's in the physical world. You know, it's complex conditions. So, you know, the obvious ones are cancers and complex cardiac conditions, valvular conditions, as well as other areas where there's complexity, neurology, as well as more complex musculoskeletal conditions. And I think, yeah, the underlying theme is that, you know, patients dealing with something that has profound impact on their life. It could be a life and death question, or really about how to manage quality of life. They're unsure, and they really want the confidence that whatever path they're proceeding with, it's really the best path for that individual.
So this is a little bit of a departure for you as I review your career, moving into direct care delivery in a healthcare facility, a healthcare provider, rather than a device or a consumer goods company. How different has that been for you as you've gotten off and running?
Well, yeah, there's always a benefit of coming out from an outsider perspective. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we really try to focus on that patient and think about that individual facing a cancer diagnosis or dealing with a complex cardiac condition, or, you know, you name it. In terms of, you know, how we approach the business and how we think about innovation, how we think operationally, it's not that different from what I've done in the past. I think there's a different element in terms of our solution, which is, you know, the expert physicians at Cleveland Clinic who play a vital role in delivering that patient experience and delivering that ultimate outcome. But I've dealt with I've worked with physicians throughout my career. And I think, you know, what we try to do is understand their needs and try to make sure that, you know, as we're designing solutions, you know, on one hand, it has to be great for the patient, but also to make sure from a workflow standpoint, we make it easy for that specialist to provide that level of care. And we've really looked at, you know, leveraging Amwell's technology to make that come to life.
Sure. And I assume while some folks have gotten more familiar with the technology in the past several years, it's sort of a sea change for Cleveland Clinic. And of course, it's been a sea change for the entire world as we've lived through the pandemic over the last year and a half. I'm wondering if you could speak to how you've seen telehealth changing in the course of the pandemic. How is it being used? How do you see it being used differently now or into the future? It's been sort of this inflection point for telehealth.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the reality is, you know, the technology to deliver telehealth has been there, but, you know, what you needed was a burning platform. And, you know, in this case, the burning platform became COVID-19 and the global pandemic. And it really has forced a change in attitudes from, you know, both the patient and the provider standpoint. I think historically there was a little bit of the ultimate standard of care is that face-to-face interaction. And, you know, in certain cases, that still is really what's necessary, but it's not black and white. And we're finding is, you know, patients, you know, have adapted quickly when they realize how convenient it can be. The fact that I can be sitting in, you know, in San Diego and or Kuala Lumpur and access one of the leading cardiologists in the world at Cleveland Clinic virtually, I mean, that's a pretty significant improvement. So I'm not limited to who's available in my current geography. So I think part of it's attitudinal and also from the physician standpoint. You know, there's been a bit of an evolution where, you know, there was a crush of how do you scale up quickly and to deliver virtual care. You know, it went from, you know, I think somewhere around, you know, 10 to 12% of interactions were virtual prior to the pandemic and quickly went to 80%. And frankly, it stressed the system a lot and workflows weren't necessarily optimized. The technology wasn't necessarily optimized and took a little bit of sorting out to get that in place. I mean, what we hear is, again, the patients, they love the convenience and the access that the virtual visit can provide. You know, I was having a conversation with one of the cardiologists at Cleveland Clinic last week, and yeah, he was saying that, you know, beyond just the sort of patient access and care, there's certain things he looks at and says that, you know, why would you go back? You know, and he mentioned, you know, they're doing multidisciplinary boards to talk about some complex case. And this was a cancer patient where there was some complications based on the patient's cardiac condition. And he said, you know, historically, we'd be trekking all over the campus, trying to get everyone in one room. Half the people wouldn't necessarily be paying attention. And he said, it's just so much better having the images right in front of you, the pathology right in front of you, and really being able to interface with peers. So I think, you know, what it's forced is, again, that behavior change that needed an impetus. I think there were some rough patches at the beginning, but folks are finding that value proposition. And, you know, I think that will continue to grow. Now, there has been a retrench to a certain extent. You know, it's the data I've seen it went from about, you know, 10 or 12% pre-pandemic, peak about 80, and then the 20 to 25% of visits are now virtual. So it's set a new baseline. And I think, you know, that will just continue to grow as people want to take advantage of easy access to expertise and getting the best care possible.
Right. And a lot of that is driven by reimbursement. The sort of the retrenchment seems to be driven by reimbursement.
So I think, you know, reimbursement was certainly an impediment. You know, the reimbursement levels for a virtual visit were not the same as in person. There's also licensure issues. So with the emergency use authorization, the licensure issues became less problematic. And I think that has definitely caused some of the retrenchment. And I think, you know, a lot of it was that elective procedures, et cetera, were put at bay. So I think, yeah, I do think that from reimbursement, from what I'm seeing, reimbursement and from licensure, we're seeing the movement in that direction. It'll still take a few years. But at least now, really, the motivation's there. We're necessary. I don't think the motivation to drive those things was quite as keen as it is, you know, now that the use cases have been proven.
Right. And I suppose there are folks clamoring both as clinicians and as patients for these changes to be made permanent, whether it's reimbursement or licensure related issues. And, you know, different systems have been able to address different pieces of the puzzle in a variety of creative ways. And I guess that'll have to continue until we get a systemic fix.
Yeah.
Your second opinions, I guess, may drive in-person visits to the Cleveland Clinic. Is that a significant proportion of the outcome of the second opinions, or do you have visibility into that, or
yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah, great questions. Our overall goal, as an organization, is we're really trying to help people have increased confidence in whatever decision they're making, whatever pathway. And to some extent, we're neutral in terms of, do they continue care with their current, their current clinician, or do they seek a different pathway? We see, over the past 18 months since we launched this new service, 78% of the time there's a change in the care pathway that's recommended. Sometimes it's a less invasive procedure. Sometimes it's actually postponing a procedure because it's not really critical at this point. And because, Cleveland Clinic physicians are, it's a staff physician model, there's really no incentive to push one approach or another from a modality standpoint. And about 28% of the time, there's a change in the underlying diagnosis. We see actually a large percentage of patients, a large number of patients do end up transferring care to Cleveland Clinic. And I think, particularly in the cardiac space, given Cleveland Clinic's leadership in that area. And I think, at least the examples I've seen, it's, generally where there's an expertise and a procedure that, promises or better outcomes for that patient, better quality of life, and oftentimes less invasive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see how the impact of the second opinions play out with individual patients.
And if you think about it again from the virtual standpoint, it's a pretty big commitment to say I'm going to find a clinician at Cleveland Clinic and I'm going to travel there for care and take any leading academic medical center. But the fact that you could access that physician virtually, they've been able to look at in high level of granularity, look at your medical records, and we get full medical record download, pathology imaging, and really taking a critical eye to that diagnosis, so that it's a relatively low hurdle for that patient to take advantage of it. And then, in some cases, it may be the right approach to think about transferring care. But if you continue with care with a local provider, you're going in with better insight and a higher level of confidence in what you're doing. We work with payers, and one question we get from payers is, okay, so do all roads lead to Cleveland? And it's an affirmative no. We're really trying to identify the most appropriate pathway for that patient. We've seen that there's cost savings through catching misdiagnosis as well as really optimizing the care path. But that those benefits can be had whether the patient's having their ultimate treatment in Cleveland or somewhere halfway around the world. And it's resonated pretty well with the health plans we've spoken to.
Sure. If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Frank McGillin, CEO of The Clinic by Cleveland Clinic. Frank, I am wondering if you could speak to changes that you've seen in telehealth over time. Are there specialties such as behavioral health, beyond the work that you're describing now? Behavioral health is an area that seems to have seen tremendous growth in the course of the pandemic and the need for that on a remote basis. Are there other specialties where you see an increase in need, an increase in demand? Does that play into plans for the future at your company?
Yeah, there's definitely been a evolution over time. I mean, if you look at telehealth several years ago, it was more about like urgent care, and it was just strep throat, sniffles, how do I access, some really, I'll call it a basic level of care.
Right. And I should interject. It's moving the urgent care visit face-to-face to a virtual encounter, but it's still face-to-face. The work that you've been describing up until now in our conversation is really not a single face-to-face encounter. It's a transmission of a great deal of data and review of that, and then some internal discussion, and then an encounter with a patient or a referring physician, right?
Yeah. And whether it's urgent care, in the physical world or virtual urgent care or primary care, generally it was more episodic in that, I'm seeing a patient with a specific, and that physician may not interact with that patient again.
Right.
I think what we're seeing and behavioral health, I think, is a great example where, if you look at the need versus the demand versus the supply, the imbalance. And, the virtual access has helped really address that sort of imbalance. And, you're no longer limited as much geography, time, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's had a pretty meaningful benefit. We think in specialty care, whether it's in neurology, oncology, or other specialists or other specialties, again, what was seen is something needed, the physician-patient interaction was seen as needing to be, more in the physical world, that there is a opportunity for virtual care. I mean, I think, kind of looking forward, you'll see more of that, longitudinal care and more care and, pick your chronic condition where digital tools will enable, better monitoring, better tracking, et cetera, with that patient over time. But there's an opportunity to layer in, the medical specialist and also triage at various levels, whether it's a pharmacist or primary care doc, but having an ability to break the glass if necessary and escalate it to the appropriate specialists.
Right. So what I hear you saying is that there's a platform that can enable a team approach to care, but also layer in some digital tools and some intelligence in the process. So not everything is about a face-to-face interaction. There may
Absolutely.
Be care pathways designed for particular situations, I imagine, or other sorts of digital tools integrated with the, quote unquote, telehealth, what we think of traditionally as telemedicine, the video conference call with the doctor.
Yeah. I mean, it's a simple math problem. If you talk about, access to care and managing supply and demand, if it's a one-on-one video interaction or a one-on-one face-to-face interaction, I mean, your limitation is physician time. Mm-hmm. And whether that's a primary care physician or a specialist, we believe with digital tools that, there's an opportunity for a multiplier effect. We think that, a lot of programs, their digital health programs today are they're more wellness or dealing with lower acuity, where we believe that, with a combination of innovative digital tools plus access to highly trained specialists, that if properly orchestrated, we can, have a profound impact on populations.
Mm-hmm. So is that a near-term goal? Is that what you see happening in, quote unquote, the next normal, say over the next 6 to 12 months? What does telehealth look like through that period?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to continue to evolve to say, how do you up the value equation? And that value equation, whether you're the patient who's taking advantage of that, if you're the health plan that's saying, how can I, improve care and reduce cost, or the clinician who's trying to say, how do I reach more patients? How can I touch more lives where, my level of expertise and specialty can have an impact? And I think the model's been proven, and now the question is, what are some of the new possibilities moving forward?
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything more that you can share in terms of how you're thinking about this for the clinic at Cleveland Clinic?
Well, I think, you know, we're looking at what are some of the biggest challenges facing society, you know, whether it's particularly within chronic disease. And we think, you know, we think tapping into and be able to multiply the impact of some of the, you know, top specialists in the world in various disciplines, whether it's in cardiology or behavioral health, neurology, et cetera, that we can develop programs that will that really have fundamental impact. So we're pretty excited about the potential. Nothing specific we can share right now, but I'd say keep posted.
Well, to wrap things up, Frank, I'd like to ask you my final question, which is, if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing about healthcare that you would hope or maybe expect to find has changed drastically?
Yeah, I'd love to see healthcare be as easy to access as the best e-commerce retailers on the planet. You know, it's healthcare from a patient standpoint can be tough to navigate. It's expensive. And can be confusing and frustrating. You think about, you know, what could be more important to you than your health. And, you know, I believe that the potential is there to make it easier while maintaining humanity. And I think that's one of the things we're focused on as we look to unlock access to care.
I'm going to follow up just because you mentioned e-commerce, and you know, we're often not in a position where we can choose to shop around or delay a decision when we're dealing with healthcare. So, I mean, that is an analogy that we all use frequently when talking about the future of healthcare. But I'm wondering if you see that falling apart if you push the analogy. Is that a problem, or is that just sort of a good general start to say, you know, it should be as easy as e-commerce?
Healthcare decisions really constitute the most important decisions that any individual is going to be making for themselves or their family. But I think despite the complexity, there are so many opportunities to make it easier, whether it's the scheduling, whether it's helping identify the most appropriate physician or specialist to deal with your condition, whether it's trying to access tools to help you manage your condition. So I think, you know, I think it's easy to say that healthcare is different. It can't be simplified. Despite the complexity of healthcare, I think we can need to continue to shoot it. You know, how do you make it just a easy, high quality, patient-friendly experience that people want to talk about? And I don't think we should use the complexity of healthcare or, you know, as a cop-out to not continue to push the envelope in that direction.
Fair enough. Healthcare is different, but it's not that different. It's part of the human experience, and it's part of the human experience that we're collectively moving online. Well, Frank, thank you very much for joining us.
David, it was a pleasure.
You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.